This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, good Wednesday to you. Thanks for joining us in this Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. One day away from the NBA draft. It'll take place on Thursday night. Victor Wembanyama will be the number one pick after that. Who knows? It could all be chaotic. It could all go as according to mock draft plans. That's kind of the beauty of this process. We know that the Charlotte Hornets have the number two pick, and they've got a pretty big decision to make. Do they go with Brandon Miller from Alabama, or do they go with Scoot Henderson from the G League? And what about Zion Williamson? Now, there are reports that the Pelicans are unlikely to move Zion Williamson. Now, I don't know if this is true or not. Sometimes you get rumors on both sides of things. But I do know that there's been some contention between Zion Williamson and the Pelicans. And it has everything to do with his weight. And it has everything to do with his rehabilitation. If you remember last season, the Pelicans were a pretty good team until about the turn of the year when we got to about January. And the Pelicans were a team battling Denver for a top spot in the Western Conference. But then he got a hamstring injury. And what happened after that really set in motion what you're starting to hear now. Which is, all right, the hamstring injury was supposed to take 2 to 4 weeks, 4 to 6 weeks, 6 to 8 weeks. All of a sudden, then out of nowhere, he was shut down for the rest of the season. And then it got to a point where the Pelicans got into the play-in tournament, and people were wondering if Zion Williamson was healthy enough to play, and he wasn't healthy enough to play. And it made you wonder what exactly was happening, and how in the world were the Pelicans okay with this? Well, they weren't okay with this, because he was gaining weight, and he wasn't in shape, and he wasn't trying to rehab at all. And here was the big issue. The Pelicans were trying to do this and then to get him to be, again, get back into playing shape. And Williamson has a problem with the organization. Because it does beg the question, if indeed the New Orleans Pelicans want to move on past Zion Williamson, their number one overall pick back in 2019, what team would be willing to take him if the team that is getting rid of him, you know, has problems? This is a very small world, and it's especially small league. There's no way that there is not a GM in the NBA that doesn't know exactly what the Pelicans were dealing with when it came to Zion Williamson. Now, it goes twofold because we've seen troubled players within organizations and other sports get traded. And sometimes it is to try to benefit the team. It's not like an expiring contract, where you go, well, I'll take him for the year because I get to free up the money when he's done. It's not that. You would be trying to convince somebody to take on Zion Williamson's hefty contract after a failure in New Orleans, with New Orleans saying, nah, it's all good. It's not all good. And you would have, as an organization, would have to feel like there would have to be things in place for you to make it better. We're different. Maybe we'll handle Zion Williamson in a different way. Maybe he needs another coach. Maybe he needs different teammates. Maybe he just needs a different GM, and we might be the organization to fit that. But I think you run the problem where there's not a real reason to trade him other than he's been a problem. When Damian Lillard or Bradley Beal are on the trading block, you know why they'd be on the trading block. Now, Portland and Damian Lillard haven't made it official yet, but Bradley Beal was on the trading block because the Washington Wizards want to start all over again. You understand. It's not a Bradley Beal thing. We don't have a personality clash. He's not a pain. Yes, he's often injured, and he didn't live up to the expectations when he gave him that big contract. But the reality is that you as an organization, if you're the Phoenix Suns, you know why Bradley Beal was available. Same thing with Damian Lillard, right? Everybody knows Damian Lillard. If he's available in a trade come Thursday night by Portland, it is because Portland wanted to go in a direction where they have the number three pick in the draft. If they go with a player that they intend to keep, Lillard's likely to leave that team. He's likely to ask for a trade because he's not going to be part of some rebuilding youth process. He wants veteran players. But Zion is a completely different thing. Zion is a completely different circumstance. This isn't a Pelicans team that is trying to rebuild. This is a Pelicans team that was trying to figure out how to get back to where they were when he was healthy and playing those 29 games, and they were a very, very good basketball team, and he was averaging 28 to 29 points a night. So if you're Charlotte, then you have the number two pick in the draft, and the Pelicans have reportedly want Scoot Henderson in the worst way, and they're willing to make a package deal, if they are, and again, reports are that they aren't, but there are some reports that say they still are, then if you're Charlotte, you have to figure out all of the pluses that you can provide that New Orleans can't to get the best out of Zion Williamson. Right? Is this a guy that took a hamstring injury that people thought he'd be out 4 weeks to 6 weeks and turned it into the second half of the season completely off the roster? Is he that kind of player? Now, there are reports that he doesn't like to put in the work, doesn't like to put in the effort, especially coming off injuries. Do you have an organization that can fit that, that can convince him otherwise? That playing basketball is kind of a two-way street. There's the games, but then there is the workouts and keeping yourself in shape and not getting overweight to a point where it causes you some injuries. It's a big question that's going to come up Thursday. Now, it couldn't, it may not be because the Pelicans might keep him. But there is some speculation that at least a conversation is going to be had. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that's Ron with two N's. So again, Thursday night, it'll be the Victor Wembanyama coronation. Every now and then, the NBA has this where there is a mega, mega pick. There is a guy that is where you want to win the lottery, clear favorite. You want to win the lottery for that guy. That was Zion Williamson in 2019, right? You can go down the list. It was LeBron James, of course. I think it was Yao Ming in 2002. Yep. He was another one. And then there's, of course, the Anthony Bennett's of the world who get drafted by the Cleveland Cavaliers, and nobody has any idea why that happened. Right. But last year, there were a couple of guys that could have gone number one. Paolo Banchero, I think, it wasn't a surprise, but there were people who were thinking that there were other players that could have gone ahead of him. That's not the case on Thursday. This is San Antonio immediately saying he's our guy.
It would be a massive upset.
Massive upset.
If the Spurs went in there and went, like, what would you say yesterday? Brandon Miller? Like,
you're right.
Like,
yeah.
All of a sudden, like, Brandon Miller. We'd be like, wait, what? Victor Wembanyama was doing the parade yesterday.
Yeah, that's right.
Throwing out the first pitch at Yankee Stadium because he knows that this is his time. This is his moment.
This is his moment.
Did you see the video of him throwing
it? I did. But then I saw the video of his hand.
Yeah.
So I
guess it's what would be like us throwing a golf ball.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. So that was the two things that I saw was the video. Somebody posted the video of his pitch, which was terrible.
Yeah.
But then somebody posted his hand covering the baseball.
It's just
like it wraps the baseball like a piece of paper. And so I'm wondering how does one throw something that size accurately?
Yeah, because if you and I throw it, we're getting our fingers on the ball.
Yeah, right.
We got it cupped in there like you're supposed to, and it looks perfect. I mean, he can't get his fingers on the ball.
If he put his fingers like where Garrett Cole puts his fingers, he can't. It would be so far. The baseball is so far out from his hand. He's flicking it with his wrist.
Yeah.
He can't pitch it where his fingers kind of curl in and then your palm kind of comes in with some extra force and then you spin it with your fingers. He's holding it. His fingers are so long and his hand's so big. It's just dangling there. And he's trying to snap it in. It's going to be pretty inaccurate. But, man, it was a bad throw.
Yeah, it was a bad throw.
It was a bad throw. I see him, like, ducking on the subway and stuff yesterday. We thought it was a good idea to put him on a New York subway.
Yeah.
I thought that was a good idea.
Oh, we need to get photos and video. I didn't understand that part either.
Yeah, you better be well surrounded by a lot of people.
But
a lot of
guards. But this is like you said, start off the show. This is his coronation. That's why he's doing these things.
Right. Exactly.
You know, there's probably a photo of him at Times Square. There's a photo of him standing at Battery Park, pointing at the Statue of Liberty. He's doing all the touristy things because he is going to be called first.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, and it should take the Spurs 30 seconds to put their card in.
And again, there's a whole bunch of players that have come into this league where they knew they were going to be the number one pick. They knew they were going to be the top dog. And Victor Wembanyama is getting all of that and more. That's the way it's going to work. It's a guy that is. And here's the fun part about him. He, again, over in France, he has been developing all year to play in the NBA, right? Remember when we talked about John Calipari and his recruiting brilliance in why he gets these five-star All-Americans that hasn't resulted in national championships? But when he recruits these guys, he says to them, I will work on your NBA game. I know you want to play in the NBA. Come here and we'll work on your NBA game. Like, we're going to try to win some basketball games, but I'll develop you in the right way. If you need to work on X, Y, or Z, we'll work on X, Y, or Z. Victor Wembanyama on that French team, that's all they did. That's all they did was work on his game for the NBA. And they, I think they made it to the finals over there in France, but his whole purpose on that team was to make sure he was going to be ready to make it to the next level. And now he's ready to make it. We'll see. And I, look, I know people, there's a lot of skeptics out there, and I get it when the media tells you a player is going to be great. You're always wondering where the other shoe is going to drop. And I completely understand that, right? I can remember Ben Simmons when he was at LSU. And if you had told me when I was at the SEC championship game in his final season at LSU in 2016, I was thinking to myself, all right, this guy, you know, he's going to be a great NBA player. Well, he turned out to be a pretty good NBA player, but nowhere near the game-changing presence that you see on other teams. You know, definitely not a guy like an Anthony Davis or a guy like a Derrick Rose, who were also number one picks. So there was a lot of hype around Ben Simmons being the number one overall pick. Zion, as I mentioned earlier, was the same kind of player, right? Zion came into this league, celebratory nature. He was going to be number one. Everyone knew he was going to be number one. And again, Victor Wembanyama is that kind of player. But I don't think, I think that it's when you don't have a player that plays in the United States and the only way you see him is YouTube clips, you're not really watching a game unless you're a diehard. If you're a diehard and you're streaming these French games, God bless you. But what you usually see in YouTube clips is the guy's best stuff. You see his highlight reel.
Yeah.
It's not like you're watching him at Duke or watching him at Kansas play night in and night out, going through the ups and downs. But I think I agree with everybody, Mike. Just size, speed, agility, jumping, all the things that he can do. In a couple of years,
touch
he's
on the
have,
ball.
He's, yeah, touch on the ball. Yep, exactly. So I think he'll have the Spurs in the playoffs in a couple of years. But don't judge him right away if you can't get them to the postseason now. That team's got a lot more problems than the number one pick in the draft.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, summertime. It's today, the longest day of the year. You get the most sunshine.
That's right.
That's right. So use it up, people. Don't blow it. Because it starts turning as soon as we get done today. It starts gradually getting darker early. So there you go.
And I'm wondering how it's going to be now that we're like not doing daylight savings anymore.
Is that official?
I thought it was.
Have we dumped it?
So I'm curious. We're not going to fall back. What
we're
that's going to be
keep
like?
It the way it is.
Yeah, it's going
right?
to be this time, all the way, all year round.
I know that there were a number of bills to put that in. I didn't know it had gotten passed. So
didn't it pass?
I don't know.
Maybe it didn't.
I don't know. I'm asking. It might. I'm totally on board if they do, but. At least if we get rid of it, we'll at least get rid of the complaining every year from people who mentally can't figure, you know, who mentally break down.
I do not know how to subtract an hour.
I honest to God, I swear I will challenge anybody on this. Sometimes I'm very sympathetic to people's complaints, but then sometimes I go, you are just trolling to troll here. Anybody that actually is like mentally breaking down over that, I'll go, you are making it 1,000 times bigger than it actually is. You had one inconvenient night. We had to move the clocks. Then eventually you figure it out. It's not the end of the world. I know you can't grasp your hand around it, but I said to people, I don't know what you want in the summertime. Don't you want it to be lighter later? Are you getting up at 4 in the morning to go for a walk? Are you? Because if you are, that's great. Good for you. Good for you if you are. Because that's when it's going to be light. Are you doing that? Are you enjoying that?
Okay, I'm confused. We need to have someone, you know, tell us exactly what's going on. So I guess some states are getting rid of daylight saving time while others aren't.
I gotcha.
So, like, for me in Texas, we're not getting rid of daylight saving times.
I think this needs to be universal.
Or what states are going? It's all right. Maybe
for interstate commerce. For interstate commerce, you have to have it consistent. Are you gonna miss out on something?
I'm gonna make it simple, right? For you and I, because I don't know which side of the fence I'm on. Okay, so it says these are the states going to permanent daylight savings time, which means I guess you're not changing the clocks anymore, right?
Okay, right.
So Tennessee is one of those states, but Texas is not.
Okay. So that makes it really hard.
So if we observe daylight saving, because you and I, you know, we're on the same time.
Right.
We talk, you know, we're just like, hey, this is the time I give you, and this is what it is, and da-da-da. So I guess, and we're supposed to fall back beginning of November. Does that mean you're not?
You know what this is, Ron?
You're going to Eastern time?
Ron, you know what this is? This is everybody being able to say what they want on their mind all the time.
Yeah.
That's what this is.
No, you're right.
That's what this is. There's no reason for this other than listen, we always like to think that the people who are elected, we always make fun of them where they're like, well, you know, they've been elected. They're normal people that are like, I think I want to run for Congress. Why not? And they got some money and they run for Congress. And then they get into Congress. They go, oh my God, my constituents, they can't stand turning the clock back. So they go back and they turn. Was this an issue when our parents were chilling out when this thing was around? Was this an issue when we were kids? Did everybody freak out like Armageddon because
all
the clocks
I remember,
had to go back or forward on 2 days out of the 365?
Yeah, all I remember is in the fall, you got to sleep in an extra hour, and then in the spring, it was harder to wake up in the morning.
That's right.
But you got used to it.
Now, those of you listening to us in Phoenix and Arizona, good for you. You guys figured it
out.
But
they've always been that way.
We've always been that way.
Yeah, so, I mean, they've chosen that path since the day they were born.
Listen, I remember when I was in Las Vegas, I was working at a station, and we were in the first year of existence, we were a Diamondbacks affiliate. And I remember getting their schedule of games where it started, and I had to figure out, living in Nevada, I had to figure out when we were in daylight savings time, they weren't. So we were on the same time when they were Pacific. When we matched, and then there were times we didn't match. And I had to figure out, oh, I got to go back. And we carried the Phoenix Suns, and we carried the Arizona Coyotes, and I had to do that all the time.
Yeah.
I had to figure out the start times for us based on their schedule. This was before the internet where they could give it to you. They just faxed it over to everybody. And I was like, okay, but we're Pacific, they're Mountain, and then when we're the same, then this is how it works. I didn't figure it all out. But in interstate commerce, that'd be impossible. If I'm in Wisconsin and I gotta send a package by 4 o'clock in Ohio, it normally would go, well, I'm Central Time, they're Eastern Time, and now I'm like, wait, but I'm Central Time, but they didn't change the clocks back, so are they the same as us? Like, we don't need a whole industry to prop up to be like, are you confused with state's time difference? Well, for a monthly fee, we'll tell you what time it is in any city at any point in any time. We don't need another industry like that. Just make it all one. But anyway, this is the longest day of the year, so enjoy it. Golf, take the dog for a longer walk, whatever you want to do. Use up the daylight because it's going away.
Each day is going to get shorter by, I don't know, probably, what, 10 seconds?
Yeah, that's right.
I don't know. I don't know how fast it, you know. I know for here, we are, especially down here in Texas, we're all counting the days to get back to fall because it has just been gnarly hot.
Yeah. I know. I wonder, when going back to that politician thing, I wonder if those old politicians have been in the Senate forever. Do they just lament missing the good old days when somebody would have to type out a letter to them?
Probably.
You know,
and put it in the mail and place a stamp on it.
So most people have been like, man, I wish there was a law.
No,
blah,
but
blah,
I mean,
blah, blah, blah. And then they would go, then they'd forget about it when
I hate, I hate this way of thinking, but you're absolutely right. I mean, it's just people who just want to bitch. I mean, I'm sorry. That's all it is.
No, it is.
It's like, oh, I hate mayo. And then all of a sudden there's going to be a revolt against mayo at some point. Because one person started it, another person's like, oh, I agree with him. And then before you know it, hey, did you know what? Senate outlawed mayonnaise.
Well,
I wouldn't care because I'm not a fan, but that's what I feel like could happen.
It feels like there's a thing that seems popular to complain about, and then people want to be in the club. They don't really feel this horrible about whatever it is.
Like, I don't get why do you have a hard time with daylight savings? What is it?
Right.
How does it affect you?
I'll give you another example of that, the new Indiana Jones movie.
Yes.
I've actually seen reviews that said, you know what? It ain't bad. It ain't bad. But the consensus of people is that it's not only horrible, it should have never been done. And it feels like that's the growing momentum
people
saying this is going to be a train wreck. But some of the critics who have seen it said, all right, it's not great. We're not saying it's great.
Right.
But it's not as bad as you think it is. And in a lot of places, it's entertaining. And there's an ending that if you're a real Indiana Jones fan, you might actually tear up with. I'm like, all right. you listen, I like the movies, I'll go. But I'm not expecting Casablanca for crying out loud. I mean, but people love to pile on hatred of X, Y, or Z when they feel like they're in the crowd. And I think Daylight Savings Time has been the victim of that, where they're just like, oh, we wanted to make it so that you could play golf longer. That's it. That's all we wanted to do. That's all we wanted you and your wife to go for a walk at 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
Like, that's all we wanted to do.
Or here, since we're on the western edge of the central time, it's so your kids don't have to go to school in the dark.
In the dark. And we didn't want farmers to wake up at 4.
Yeah.
So, I get it.
I don't know. You know, I mean, okay, if we're getting rid of daylight savings time, are they ever going to switch central television viewing? Because I've grown used to it. I'm letting you know right now because, I mean, for me, primetime always started at 8. Now primetime starts at 7. I like it.
I like it. I've always liked that time slot. Same with the mountain time zone. I've always enjoyed that.
I mean, you've lived on West Coast. You lived on East Coast. And it's like 8 o'clock at night.
Every time zone in the continental U.S.
Yeah, there you go.
Yes. The people, I have friends who go, mountain time zone's the best. I go, is there really a best? Isn't time just relative? Like, if you're on the East Coast, like, it would be cool if you got this game at 6 rather than 8:30, you know, whatever. But is there really
I did like NFL Sundays in Hawaii.
Yeah, well,
I'm not
going
to lie to you.
But you lost the prime time aspect of it.
Oh, you totally did.
You know, like just sitting at home, be like, it's quiet, it's nice.
Hey, listen, it was 7 a.m. games were amazing, but then the afternoon slate, you never watched.
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could live in Hawaii. I don't think I could wake up on a Sunday to watch NFL week. I love sleeping in. I dread some of the Formula One races I have to wake up for that I want to watch. Sometimes I just tape it. Like my wife will go, is there a race on? I go, yeah. She goes, where is it? I go, it's in France or wherever. And I go, it starts at 7. She goes, you going to get up? I go, I want to watch it live. You know what? Then sometimes the alarm goes off and I go, oh no. Click.
Yeah.
I got it. I got the DVR rolling.
What about the really early ones? It's like start at 3 in the morning.
They used to have a race in Turkey. They used to start 4 o'clock in the morning my time. I woke up one time for that. Now, I will say the races that they have in Australia and Tokyo, they start at midnight, and I like that. I have actually enjoyed
that. Yeah, that's not bad.
Because what I've done is I've gone and gotten snacks. I've had a little mini me party because nobody in the house is up.
Well, that makes it even better because then you're not feeling guilty.
Exactly. So I get a couple of snacks. I kind of go into the media room by myself and just watch. It's midnight. It usually goes till 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yep.
I'm like, it's Friday. Saturday night's good. But, cracking the alarm on a Sunday morning is tough. All right, when we come back, more on the NBA draft. But Connor Orr, SI.com, has a very interesting article about Hard Knocks and how to avoid some of the disasters. Next.
Drums, please.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, again, celebrating summer. And you know what summer brings? Hard Knocks. But as we talked about before, not that long ago, that the NFL is having a hard time putting teams on Hard Knocks. According to Connor Orr of Sports Illustrated, there's one team that's been raising their hand, and that's the Washington Commanders. But the league is like, anybody else? Anybody? Anybody? Anybody else? It's like a teacher in a classroom where they know if they call on Johnny, Johnny's going to give a wise answer, wise crack to a question, and you just don't want to deal with it. And Johnny keeps raising his hands because he's got a good one. And you have the teacher going, anybody? Anybody? Melanie? Joanne?
He's got one to make the whole class laugh.
That's right. And you don't want to end up being a part of that. The Commanders are so dysfunctional and going through this ownership change that the league is like, not this year. Maybe down the road, but no thanks.
Yeah, because I think the league understands Hard Knocks will expose a lot of dirty secrets.
Yeah, we don't need this yet. When you got that new owner in place and everything's running smooth, maybe next camp.
Yep.
Not this camp. Not this one. So they're looking around. And so he writes a really fun article. It says 3 simple steps to avoid getting screwed by Hard Knocks, which is really a great article because it talks about some of the problems that teams have had. So basically his number one thing is create the illusion of some competition that's utterly meaningless. I think this is the biggest one that you have to do if you're a Hard Knocks team, is that if you've covered teams or you're a diehard fan and you kind of follow teams, in the NFL, position battles, they don't really exist. There's a few, but it's not like college where a new freshman could easily beat out a junior at that position. Politically, and I use that term loosely here, politically, you're going to play guys that you brought into the team to play that position. If you're paying a linebacker, you know, $20 million, whatever it is, I'm sorry, there's no position battle. Even if you're like, man, Joe Smith is he's a whale of a player, man. That rookie out of Auburn, he's not beating out the veteran. There's a reason why you paid him $20 million. There's a reason why you're going to start him. So that happens in a lot of positions in the NFL, but it doesn't mean you can't create something. It doesn't mean you can't start getting the cameras to focus on something that in the end isn't really going to come to fruition at all. And don't make it obvious like backup punter or third string QB. Like, actually pretend like you have like so-and-so could take down a Pro Bowl corner in the secondary of your defense, even though in the end that's not the case. The other thing is that he points out is go focus on a player you're going to cut. You know you're going to cut. But find a quirky player that you can sort of steer Hard Knocks' way. Hey, do you like Tommy? Well, Tommy really likes Pokemon cards. In fact, he's got a whole collection. In fact, he's one of the top collectors in the country. He's got a deep collection worth thousands of dollars of Pokemon cards. Why don't you go over to him and why don't you ask him about his love affair with Pokemon and see his collection, maybe go to his apartment, maybe talk to people in his hometown about how much he loved Pokemon and go do that. And meanwhile, you're operating and your assistant coach is yelling at the position coach and a linebacker is yelling at another linebacker and a quarterback is screaming at another wide receiver. Don't worry about that. The Pokemon guy is going to get his love. And then don't worry. Don't forget to roll the cameras when we ask him to come into the building with his playbook, because that's exactly what's going to happen when this thing is over. And so those are some of the ways that Connor Orr has said, you know, feature somebody that's got a unique trait. And then also, the other thing he said was, teach your coaching staff another language that nobody can understand.
Fantastic.
That is great, isn't it? So if your coach wants to yell at a player, use Mandarin or something. Just find a language that you can learn that that most Americans can't figure out. It's like in tennis. You know those umpires in tennis? They're familiar with curse words in all these languages.
Oh, of course.
They know it all. So you can't get away with like,
listen,
well, I speak blah, 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 and you don't know that I just cursed you under my breath. Yeah, I do. I do know, because I prepared for this match, and I know exactly who you are, and I know exactly what your language
growing is. Growing up in Southern California, right, and playing soccer all throughout that, I was very good at Spanish swear words.
Right, sure.
Because,
sure.
I mean, you know, you just play a lot of guys from Mexico or other places in Latin America. That's all you would hear. But I also picked up on actual words, you know, like, you know, when they were talking about passing the ball or, you know, who's calling for it and stuff like that, like which way they were going to go. You pick up on it after a while. I have no doubt that these tennis refs are, I mean, you name any sport. You know, I'm sure baseball umpires are slowly starting to pick up on some of the things. Because, I mean, if you get called on a strike and you don't think it's a strike, I'm sure the batters at first back in the 80s were probably like, yeah, they're going to, you know, something in Spanish to them. They're like, what did he just say?
I don't know what he said, but it had to have been bad.
But now I'm sure they're picking up on it. Like, you know, you hear it often, more often than not. And you're like, okay, well, what is that word?
Yeah, one of the things.
But I think that's a brilliant thing, having coaches. Yeah. Learn a different language just so they can talk to one another. Maybe make up a language.
Because you got to turn this thing around so quickly. Like, you don't have time to go, like, get a language expert to find out what it is. You're just going to, well, we may not even be able to air it. I don't know. Go find the kicker that can sing Les Mis. Like, go find that guy and go, yeah, he can do some amazing stuff. And that's I will say this on a serious note. We talked about this before. This is a cool show. It's a show that is trying to pick up new generations, right? It's not like it's not for the people who watch this every year and have watched this thing for 20 years. It's like there's a 13-year-old, 14-year-old. It's like, yeah, I can watch some Hard Knocks. I haven't seen it before. I'm kind of getting older. But it has run its course in a way that I just don't know I don't know how to make the formula work anymore.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, most reality shows, there's a bridge that gets crossed, and they go from okay, the concept of this show is we're just going to roll cameras on this, and then it became like, well, we got to manipulate the product somehow. If you look at like Kitchen Nightmares, for example, Gordon Ramsay goes to these struggling restaurants, and in the beginning, I'm sure it was like, yeah, there's no problems here, you know, but no, there's problems here. We're going to fix it, and it made for good television. But then as you get, you can only do that so much, and then the public wants a little more. So now you've got Gordon Ramsay going out and into the crowd going, shut it down, shut it all down. That's what you're looking for. Well, you can't do that in this. Like HBO can't manipulate a Dan Campbell or somebody else to act in a particular way. They can't throw the Lions for a loophole. They can't say, well, now we've done this. We're going to throw this in there. How are you going to handle this? How are you going to handle that? There's none of that. You've got to be out of their way as they prepare for the season. So if you're not getting quality television content that is interesting to the public, then what's the point? Like, I've said this many times about the show. I think that we love watching conflict, right? We like it when the restaurant owner steps up to Gordon Ramsay, or we like it when real world cast members fight, or road world cast members fight, or whatever it may be. We like Survivor for that. We like all these shows because we like the conflict. But there really isn't conflict in a training camp. You know, one of the things we say all the time is there's never an outburst by the player when he gets cut. Never, never, ever, because the player is smart enough to know what he's getting into. He's also smart enough to know where he's been standing along the way. None of this comes as a surprise. And he also knows that it's not the end of the road, that he could get a call from the team that just cut him in the middle of the season. He could get a call from to be on a practice squad in another team. His agent is going to be working the angles, and you're not going to want video of you throwing the playbook at the coach's head or smashing a table or punching a picture. No, none of those guys are going to do it. And that's why the least interesting thing to me is cut day, because it's all the same.
Yeah.
It's the same speech. It's the same response. And it's basically the same guy going, well, we'll see what happens.
And unfortunately, it's the same respectness.
Right.
Right. Where, you know, he apologizes, but he said, you know, coach apologizes, but says you're a decent player. Player's like, I understand. Thank you for the opportunity. Here's the playbook. Not once have we been given the one thing we do want.
Right.
Which is a chair thrown through a window saying you're going to rue the day.
Yeah, never get it. Never get it. And if you did get it, you would find out later it was staged.
Right.
Like, you would find out the player was like, hey, is it okay if we do this for the cameras? And the coach goes, I'd rather not. And he goes, but all right, whatever. And you do it.
And he does it anyway.
But you're not going to do it. You're not going to do it. Because these coaches, they never cut a player in anger. Like, they never.
Right.
And if they do, that would never be. Like, a coach would never allow that camera. They would say, look, you can be in this, but you're not being in this. I got to cut this player because we've gotten an accusation that he hit his wife or something, like whatever it is, like really serious. That is going to be separate. Like, we're going to handle this behind closed doors. But a coach never goes, you wasted my time, young man. You came here and wasted our time. You're not good enough to play in this league. You're not good enough to play anywhere. You're never going to, never, ever, ever, ever going to see that. And in other reality shows, they've had to manipulate the content so that you would get something like that. But you're never going to get that on Hard Knocks. They'll keep doing it because it's good for the league. People sort of like it. It's like a summer tradition. But as more and more teams are like, yeah, no, thanks, but no thanks. Well, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? So you have to force it on somebody. All right, we'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. All right, coming up, let's get to the sub story. We got to go back to that because there's some new revelations on that. When we come back.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
Blue Eyes himself, Frank Sinatra, bringing in the summer. Starts today, June 21st. Happy birthday to my niece, Alyssa, 23 years old.
Happy birthday.
Today. Happy birthday. Just want to say hi to her. All right, so let's get the latest on this submarine story that I have been obsessed with. I watched a lot yesterday afternoon. I watched a live streaming discussion on it from WFLA in Tampa. Saw it on YouTube. Just clicked on it. Was like, oh, live streaming. The science was hard to follow because they're talking about knots and nauticals and things like that.
Yeah,
they were breaking.
Can't we come up with a universal measurement? Like,
yeah, I don't. If you tell me,
you can say
it
kilometers
goes 20 knots. I don't know what that is.
Right.
I don't know what that is.
Yeah, and I don't know why they still use it.
Yeah. So I need you to tell me.
Like
how fast that is.
I don't really understand kilometers all too well, but at least that is easier for me to comprehend and figure out.
Right. Exactly. So. The latest is, correct me if I'm wrong here, that they've heard some banging in the ocean.
Right.
But they don't know if that is the sub, but they're at least trying to get a rescue effort to see if it is.
Yeah.
They're trying to focus on that.
Because I know the other thing, too, is that I can tell you what I learned from a submariner.
Okay.
Yesterday.
Yeah, well, look at you. Talking to a submariner.
I was talking to a submariner, and that's our engineer here in the building, AD.
So oh
I know
God.
I know you've had many conversations with him.
I know, but here's the thing. If I was in Houston yesterday, AD wouldn't have gotten any work done.
No.
As soon as my show was over, I was like, come here, tell me everything you know about this. And I would have kept him, I would have questioned him for 7 hours.
I was in the bullpen talking amongst some of the others, and we're just talking sub. He walks by, and I kid you not, like 5 seconds, he's almost like he's walking backwards. He goes, you guys are all speaking my language.
Oh,
and so he this was his theory. I mean, obviously, we have no idea. No one knows what's going on. But this was his theory that the reason why that sub is lost is because there was a malfunction with the buoyancy.
Okay. So how?
So like he says, you know, like any submarine, doesn't matter if it's a submersible like this or a nuclear powered submarine like, you know, they do in the Navy. You have to be able to get rid of buoyancy, and you have to be able to turn it back on to get it back, you know, just air.
So it goes back up.
Go back up, right.
Right.
And he thinks what happened is that, you know, there was a malfunction that, you know, obviously got rid of the buoyancy because it sank, but they're not able to get the buoyancy back up. And he said the other issue is that we really don't have sonar that reaches the bottom, how far down they are.
It's... The ocean. I was talking to a friend of mine about this years before this thing, but we were talking about the ocean because I was on one other cruise, and I said the ocean is a scary place, man.
It's incredible,
petrifying place. It is deep. It's unexplored. Most of it, we don't really know what it is. Like we've explored more of
city.
Space than we are in the ocean. Yeah, like there's a lot to the ocean we still don't know about, and we don't even know what's down there. Like, we don't know what creatures still. There's still unidentified. We don't know what could be down there. But I wonder what this banging is, because some other naval guy was quoted as saying, yeah, it could be anything. But I want to know, systematic banging that you could say, like, if somebody's banging out SOS, then you would go, that's not metal just doing metal things down in the bottom
of
the ocean.
Or just hitting rocks.
Right, right.
That's my first thought was because, you know, there's an ocean current that if this thing is somehow incapacitated and just done, an ocean current could be taking it away because it's strong down there.
Yeah.
And
the other thing I missed out when we talked about this yesterday, is that I didn't realize that the mid-ocean currents... So it's not the current, like, you could be down, you could be going down and then catch something midway through and it take you far out.
Yeah.
And if you have a disabled sub that can't get out of that, you're gone. See ya. That's why the Connecticut
Have you seen, I know, I think you talked about it yesterday, but I finally saw it after the show, the video of what it looked like inside.
Uh-huh.
Where, you know, I guess he gets parts from Camping World.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Off the rack parts from Camping World.
Who the hell is going down in this thing?
And it's controlled by a video game controller. And I loved it was a report. I think it was, I'm going to give credit where I think it was CBS, whoever the reporter was. When the guy showed him, like, yeah, it's controlled by this, the reporter started laughing.
Yeah.
And I was like, hell yeah, you're going to laugh.
And it's Bluetooth, so it all. Bluetooth? What are we talking about here? What? If I was the billionaire that was on that boat, I'd be like, can I see your boat for a second? Hey, how about this? Here's $1 billion. Make me the most luxury submersible, not a submarine, but what is it called?
Submersible.
That you have. And get that stupid. I want this thing powered by nuclear fusion if possible. I don't want a video game controller.
Well, okay, here's the other thing.
I'm not going down in the ocean in that thing.
The other problem that I have with this is that. What's the point?
Yeah, what was the point?
You're in a steel tube. There are no windows.
They're watching it on a computer.
You're watching. I mean, you know, this could be the biggest racket ever by bringing someone down there, you know, swimming around in the current a little bit and, like, you know, making banging sounds on the outside. Like, oh, we just passed 1 mile deep. Right. And all the while you're like 10 feet below the surface of the water. They would never know. Then all of a sudden you show a video screen of what the Titanic looks like.
Yeah.
How would you know?
Exactly. Exactly. Like,
it's not like they're going to get out and check.
That, you're right. I bet you it's a. Oh my God, you're 100% right. What's the appeal of that?
I understood. I know the guy. One of the guys who's, and you know what? I'm like, AD said it. I believe it too. I mean, I think all these people are dead. I'm sorry.
I do too.
I don't think they're coming back. But I know the one guy who's like a British billionaire. He was also with Jeff Bezos. They went up in one of Jeff Bezos' rockets.
Really?
So, but at least that had a window so you could see outside.
So he's a rich adventurer.
At this point, he's one of those guys, and we alluded to this yesterday. You get to a certain amount of money in life or a certain amount of wealth, you don't even know what to do anymore.
Yeah, you don't know what to do. You can't find the next high.
It's $250,000 to go on this trip. I mean, and, you know, he's billionaire. I mean, beyond billions on top of billions of dollars, he's probably like, whatever.
I just think
I have nothing else to do this weekend.
I bet you. And I wonder how many people in that boat, when it malfunctioned, went, I felt like this something would happen.
Yeah.
Like just going, I had a premonition, or I looked at this thing and I was like, I don't know. We're not going to make it. What are we talking about? Going down 2 miles?
I would have taken one look inside that thing and be like, no, I'm done. I don't want
to
do that.
Can you imagine being the first people to really go in a submarine? Not one of those like things that kind of went underwater. I mean, like a real submarine. Like that must have been terrifying.
Yeah.
To be like, wait a minute, what are we doing? Like the science better be accurate. Better be 100% accurate.
Well, I mean, like a submarine, if you have a submarine with windows,
yeah,
on it can't go that deep because the pressure is too great.
That's right.
Like AD was talking about this. Like, you know, you could make like a plexiglass type thing thick enough to withstand the pressure. He says, but you can't seal it.
Yeah. Right.
And
see,
I was like,
yeah.
I'm like,
oh
yeah,
my God,
like,
I would have. Oh, I would have wasted AD's time yesterday. AD would have been like, I got six projects I got to work on. I'm like, no.
I got to rebuild a computer, Tony.
So you mean to tell me when the submarine gets down to a certain point? Yeah, exactly. Oh, my goodness.
That's what I said to him. I was like, I don't know, man. Flex tape looks like it works pretty good.
Exactly. Yeah.
He's like, yeah, not at 2 miles down. I'm like, oh, come on. What's the humor?
The Flex Seal, that commercial?
That would have fixed anything.
I sawed this boat in half, and I sealed it with Flex Seal. Look, Ma, I'm not sinking. Yeah, sure. I'm sure that would work on a submarine.
I did. You know what? I had an old car of ours. We had a sunroof that the sunroof wouldn't close anymore.
Right.
Like it broke. So we took it in and the guy's like, oh, this isn't manufactured sunroof. This was added in after the fact. And this is how much it's going to cost. And we were like, oh, we're not paying that. So we did. We ran and got some flex seal tape and just taped it all off because, you know, it's going to rain. We didn't want it leaking in. It worked perfectly.
I
was impressed.
Is this similar to like the miners? In the mine that
except that I don't think it has a happy ending.
No, I don't think it has a happy ending is right. I don't think they
But again, I mean, it could be more similar to the Malaysian airline.
That's the other one that somebody mentioned. Yeah.
You know, where it's just gone.
I watched a documentary on that on Netflix. The amount of effort that they've put into trying to find that plane is insane.
Yeah.
Insane. And then people who found pieces, they went, that's not part of that plane. And they're like, what do you mean it's not part of the plane? You go, well, I did my research, and the plane had this, this, and this, and that's not similar to what that piece you have over there.
Problem is that, what, it landed somewhere in the Indian Ocean?
Yeah.
That's a big place, man.
Yeah, it's a big place.
And you're looking for a needle.
They're fine. They were tracking it. You know, they were trying to track it. But I remember.
Sure. It took us 80 years to find the Titanic.
That's right.
And we had
that's
a better idea of where that thing was.
Remember Balloon Boy in Colorado like 10, 11 years ago? Remember him?
Yep.
Remember they thought the kid was in a box floating up with the balloon, and he wasn't?
Yep.
But remember we were all glued to that thing for a while? Yeah, I've been kind of addicted
to that
story.
Whatever happened to Balloon Boy?
Yeah, whatever happened to Balloon Boy is right. All right, we'll continue. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.